Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, and thanks for being with us tonight. I have a wonderful guest tonight, Claudia McNeely, who is a clairvoyant, psychic, healer, medical intuitive, and has a whole other bag of tricks. And we'll be talking to her in a few minutes. But first, tonight's metaphysical moment. And it comes out of a strange situation that happened today at the hospital. I'm having a hardware upgrade in a few weeks. I'm getting my hip replaced. So there's a whole series of pre-op visits you have to do. They poke you and probe you and take x-rays and draw blood, and you talk to people and all kinds of stuff. So I got to the hospital, and the perky volunteer at the desk said, "I have something you have to do. Can you sit in one of those chairs?" So I sat down, and then I heard my name called, but I couldn't see anybody calling my name. Now, as somebody who sees things other people don't see and hears things that other people don't hear, that didn't seem unusual, except it was really loud, and I figured someone was really calling my name because it was the hospital. So I stood up and went around the corner, and there at the desk was the gal who was going to do the intake stuff. And she looked at the paperwork, and she looked at me, and she said, "David, you're Mira's dad." Mira is my daughter, and Mira's dad is one of my nicknames. And I said, "How in the world do you know that? There is nothing on this paperwork that would let you know that." And she said, "I'm Jan. My daughter Mira went to preschool with your daughter Mira." Now, you got to realize that the kids are now 16 years old, and this is when they were four. Women are much better at that than I ever will be. So we talked a little bit about the kids, and I was thinking about preschool. And when my daughter was in preschool, there was a new kid that showed up, Jackie. And as soon as they saw each other, they were best friends. It was absolutely magical to watch. They always wanted to be together. There was tremendous energy and tremendous joy. There was just something special. They recognized each other. They knew each other. They were real happy to see each other. And it felt like they were real happy to see each other again. And over time, what I've come to about that experience, but also who we are and why we're here, is that we come into this experience of being physical, of having bodies, of being, in quotation marks, alive in a group. We come with friends. But you decide beforehand what the relationships are going to be, what lessons you want to learn, and how you're going to help each other learn those lessons. So, and you've done this many times before, so you kind of changed up the relationships to make it more interesting. And every once in a while, you meet somebody who you already know that you know. It's kind of like the first reality show, which started on radio and then was the longest running TV show for, I think it ran for over 10 years on early TV. Now I'm going to forget the name of it. I love it. Anyway, the point to the show was not what they do in the present reality TV, which is to embarrass people. Oh, it was a little bit to embarrass people. The idea, it was called Truth or Consequences. The idea was that they would have the person come up like it was a quiz show, and they'd ask them a question. But it was a trick question, and nobody could possibly answer it. So the person would kind of stammer through it and take a stab at it, and the host would say, "Well, you didn't tell the truth, so you have to pay the consequences." And the consequences was going out into the world with the camera following you to do some silly thing, which was embarrassing to the person that was doing it, but was kind of fun to watch. So I guess it sort of was like reality TV is now. But the point wasn't what they were doing that they were assigned to do. The point was that they were going to set up a meeting in the middle of what that person was doing. So behind the counter at the hardware store would be that person's third grade teacher, or at the store, there would be the long-lost relative. And the whole point to the show was these very poignant meetings and all the love and the emotions that came up meeting somebody that you haven't seen for a long time. So I don't know about you, but I run into people all the time where I know them. And I've had people walk up to me and say, I know you. I go, yeah, I know you too. Now, probably we'll never figure out why, and it probably isn't from here. So when I first moved up to Massachusetts, the friends that I was sharing a house with kept saying, you have to meet Tom. You got to meet Tom. Tom's a great guy. You're going to love Tom. Well, after dinner one evening, in walks Tom. And he walks over to me, looks me in the eyes, and the two of us started laughing hysterically, uncontrollably. And when we finally caught our breath, what we both said at the same time was, oh, it's you. And the meaning behind it was, I know you. I know you so well. We've done this before. And I know you're going to be a pain in the neck again. And we've been good friends for 25 years. But in the moment that we met, just like Mira and Jackie, we knew that we knew each other. So there are things going on in this world which, if you step back and look at it, you know what's going on. It just doesn't quite make sense, but it's really going on. We know people from somewhere else, and we're on this road trip together. So that's today's metaphysical moment. And now I'd like to introduce Claudia. You on the line, Claudia?
I'm here, David.
Yeah. We met on Facebook because we had some of the same friends, and we started talking on the side because we were answering questions for the same people, and realized that we do work that's very similar, but as is often the case, in kind of different ways. And you've got a really broad repertoire, so why don't you kind of introduce all the things that you do?
There's not much I don't do. I'm a medical intuitive. I'm a master energy healer, clairvoyant psychic. I do law of attraction coaching. I remove alien implants. I ghost bust. I do everything.
One-stop shopping.
One-stop shopping, yeah.
So one of the things that I love to do with these interviews is get a sense of how you wound up doing this. Because people look at folks like you and folks like me and they immediately say, oh, you must have been like that when you were a little kid, right?
Exactly.
And they miss the point that it took years and years and years of hard work and challenges before you become a master of anything.
Yeah.
So, what was your path?
I always had an interest in the occult, but I never got into it. And then in 1994, my daughter was born. We were in a car accident while I was pregnant with her. She ended up born profoundly retarded, profoundly brain damaged, and she was critically ill her whole life. Totally changed my perspective on everything. I was very angry with God. You know, I was raised in the Christian religion. Very angry with God that he would do this to my child. People would tell me, oh, well, you're being punished for something, or, you know, God did this for a reason, and all that did was make me madder. So for about 3 years, I cursed God, wouldn't have anything to do with God, and all that stuff. And I credit my daughter for getting me into all of this, because she, with her being sick, I had to start studying different ways that I could help her. And one of the things that she instilled in me, I think, was a yearning to find spirituality, to find some kind of basis for my life. And that's when I discovered metaphysics and started studying natural healing and just all the different techniques, and started meeting people that were in it. And first I started learning about healing because that was my main interest because of her. That ways that I could heal her chakra or crystals and herbs and, you know, diet and all of that kind of stuff. And then I started moving into the psychic and learning to communicate with her psychically. Even though she couldn't communicate physically, she could communicate with me psychically. And it just snowballed from there, just, you know, years and years of practice, learning to do things. And just a lot of it just came to me naturally, where I don't know how I do what I do. I just do it. And a lot of it I studied, but a lot of it just has come to me naturally. And there's been a lot of different techniques that I've created myself because they work. So now I'm trying to figure out how I can learn to teach them to other people.
But right.
That's how I got started in all this, with my daughter.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting how our children introduce us to things and teach us things?
Yes.
So,
and she's a major teacher to me, yeah.
So, for me also, what I do doesn't fit into a nice, neat category.
right.
You know, people like it when you can say you're a master teacher of Reiki or something like that, because it's a system, and they know what it is. But when you've either learned it as you did through your own trials, or you apprentice with a shaman where everything is experiential and there is no name for anything, it's harder for people to understand other than it works. What are you doing? Well, I could tell you, but it wouldn't make sense to you, you know.
Right.
So for you, as you introduce your work to people and you work with people, how do you talk about it? How do you get people to understand?
Usually the people that are brought to me come to me because they're looking for a particular thing, and they find me and they just feel like I'm the one that can help them with it. Mm-hmm. My website is absolutely huge. I've written, on everything that I know how to do is on the webpage. So they find one of those pages and they go, this is the person I want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have to try to explain it to them so much. They come looking for me. That's one of my intentions, is that the people who need me are going to find me. And that's the way it works out.
So that's, talk a little bit more about that, because for some people the idea of intention and the law of attraction may be fairly new. So
It is for a lot of people. It's the way I've lived my life, and it's just amazing watching miracle after miracle occur in your life when you can get into that knowing that everything's going to be there that you need. But intention is everything in healing, in ghost busting, in cleansing a house, anything that we do, intention is the main thing. And just by holding our intention, we're able to create anything we want to create. And I know there's people out there that need my services, and they can go forever trying to find me, or I can ask spirit, the angels, you know, whatever, to bring those people to me, and it happens that way.
One of the things that I'm kind of sitting here chuckling, because you're saying, you know, I ask the universe, the angels, whatever, and a lot of people are really hung up with, well, who do you ask? And, you know, how exactly does this work? And what are their names? And where do they live? And for me also, it's like, yeah, I could give you an answer, but the answer changes all the time as I understand things more deeply and differently.
And from moment to moment, you know, it depends on what mood you're in. You know, when my son was young, he was about probably 2, 3, 4 years old, little bitty kid. And I was trying to explain to him what God was. And I was naming off all the names of God that I could think of. And he was just looking at me like I was crazy. Finally, I said, Wakantata, which is a Native American name for God. And he said, oh, okay. And he understood it then.
It's interesting what kids latch onto and what they don't.
Yeah.
You know, and in many ways, the Native American tradition has words that are, to me, the most profound in their simplicity. You know, when you say the great mystery, you pretty much said it all. You know, we don't know what it is, but we know that it's much bigger than we are, and we know it's where everything comes from. or calling things grandfather and grandmother.
Right.
So saying that whatever this is, whoever this is an old wise person that is here for me to take care of us, and I can trust it.
Right.
Without.
I think the same energy can go by many names. You know, what I call angels, somebody else could call their God. You know, it's just an energy, and I choose to call it angels.
Right. And that shows up all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in every religion, there is something in their way of looking at it that holds the energy of the Archangel Michael,
right.
of the protector. There is something that holds the energy of Mary, the great mother. There's something which is the most powerful God that created everything. Which, again, Native Americans just call creator or source. So they're all there, and they're everywhere all over the planet. It's just that the way it's talked about is different.
Right.
So the Western religions talk about there being one God, the religions of the book. But in Catholicism, you have all the saints.
Mm-hmm.
And the energies of those saints are extremely similar to the manifestations of God in the Hindu religion, where there are a number of different deities, each with a different aspect of what God is and how God functions in the world. So well, actually, if you look at many of the things in Catholicism, they're very close to what goes on in the Hindu tradition. Where you say prayers by counting beads, and you repeat sounds or phrases over and over again the same way that you repeat prayers in Catholic Church. The burning of incense, the lighting of candles, the sitting and contemplating a statue. You know, all of those things which seem very Catholic to people that are in that tradition and don't know anything about the outside, don't know that the much older religions of the East, like the Hindu tradition and the Buddhist tradition, have things exactly like that.
Yeah.
And that somehow it got brought to the West, not the other way around.
Right, yeah.
One of the conversations I have periodically, usually with people that come to the door to talk about God, is people will ask, well, which God do you pray to? I've had this conversation with a lot of people. And my answer is, do you believe in one God? Because if you believe in one God, you can't have that conversation.
Exactly.
There can only be one whatever, whoever it is, that anyone could be praying to, no matter what they call it.
Right.
It can't be any other.
That's right.
So if you're hung up on the name, you're missing the point that there's only one God.
I agree.
But that's often difficult for people to latch onto because they've been told for so long that it's this one way. It can't be any other.
Right. And that's what I learned when I was when my daughter gave me that yearning to get back to spirit. I started studying all the religions in the world. And when I learned about the Eastern religions, and their belief in reincarnation and their proof of reincarnation and all that stuff, it was such a relief to me to know that this is not the only life my daughter's ever had. It's not the only life she's going to have. That even though in this life she was profoundly retarded and couldn't do anything, in other lives she wasn't that way.
Right.
And that was really a relief to me to come to that kind of an understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's fascinating to me how much of the conversation about whether the soul exists and what it is gets really complicated rather than just realizing there is something that doesn't disappear.
Right.
We don't exactly know what that intelligence is or where it goes or how exactly it works in all of that. There are a lot of stories about it. but the idea that, well, the laws of thermodynamics and physics, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only change form.
Right.
So I always loved the there were scientific experiments done in the early 1900s where they would put a dying person on a very sensitive scale to measure the weight of the soul.
Right.
And there is a difference in weight immediately on the last exhalation that's not explainable by anything physical, and it's 3/4 of an ounce.
Well, I know what my, you know, but even before my daughter died, I knew life goes on. I mean, I knew it. But after she died, she gave me so much proof of that. You know, she, there was communication between us from the moment that she died. She showed me what her heaven, because we create our own heaven. You know, it says that in the Bible, that you create your own, there will be mansions for you in heaven. She went and created her own mansion, and she shared it with us and showed us what it was like and let us come and astral travel and be there with her. It was just, she showed me beyond a shadow of a doubt, yes, life really does go on. It doesn't stop.
Yeah, and once you have that, once you have that sense, everything changes.
It does. It does.
Have you seen the
movie? It's one thing to know it mentally, but it's another thing to actually have the experience.
Right. Have you seen the movie What Dreams May Come?
Oh, I loved it.
Isn't that a wonderful movie?
Yeah.
For folks that haven't seen it, go out and find it on Netflix or wherever you can and watch it immediately. It's very much about creating your – what happens when you die, creating your own heaven, creating your own hell, and how love can change everything, including when somebody has created their own hell. It's probably the most profound love story I've ever seen.
It is. It is.
And it's gorgeous. It's a luscious movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do mediumship also. And I have yet to talk to any spirit that is in hell.
Mm-hmm.
It has never, none of the people I've ever talked to has been in hell. I've talked to some that are kind of in a in between where they don't know where to go.
Right.
And they're just kind of, you know, still stuck. They're not really ghosts, but they're just stuck and don't know where to go. But as far as somebody that's in a hell, I have never run across anybody.
Well, one of the things that's beautifully illustrated in the movie, but it's also what I've seen, is the law of attraction works in real time with no time delay on the other side. And if you believe that because of what you've done in your life, you will be punished and punished in a certain way, you will be attracted to where everybody with that belief it has been drawn together to act out that punishment because they believe they deserve it.
Right.
And the movie really illustrates it beautifully. And the only thing that's keeping them there is the belief.
Right.
And I've seen entire cemeteries clear out when someone said, oh, you know, we know we're sinners and everything. It's like, no, look through me to the heart of God and you'll find out there is no judgment and you're not a sinner. And they all go, oh, I don't have to be here. Hey, I'm out of here.
Right.
And they go to light.
I will call an angel when I'm trying to release the spirit to come get the spirit. I have had some that are afraid of the angels because they feel like that they've done something so wrong that if they go with the angels, they're going to be punished. And they're ashamed. And once I explain to them, you know, that there's nothing to be ashamed of, sometimes they'll go ahead and go with the angels, but sometimes I have to call a family member to come get them because they'll refuse to go with the angels.
Let's hold that thought because we're right up against the break. And we'll be right back and we'll give out the phone number for call-ins. We're here on Empower Radio. Stay here. We'll be right back.
There's just something about being outdoors.
My family camps. We love it.
Eat, sleep, fish. That's me.
I like climbing the trees in our yard.
I can't imagine not having these woods.
These trees mean everything to me.
But there's this bug. It's killing the trees.
The emerald ash borer beetle has destroyed millions of trees.
In our forests and neighborhoods.
It lives in firewood.
When you move firewood, you spread the beetle.
Help stop the emerald ash borer beetle.
Promise you won't move firewood.
I promise to never move firewood.
Not to move it to my campsite.
Or bring it back home.
I promise to burn it where I buy it.
This is so important to me.
I promise to protect the trees.
I promise not to move firewood.
Will you?
The emerald ash borer beetle has destroyed millions of trees. It lives in firewood, and when you move firewood, you spread the beetle. Our state is on the front lines. Learn more at stopthebeetle.info and promise you won't move firewood. A message from the USDA.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg! Ha-ha! I win! Whoa! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember,
I wasn't going to school because I was just making money stealing cars. And one day, I was put into juvie for 2 stolen cars, robbery of a house, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Well, I was 10 when I first got involved with drugs. I skipped school because, you know, nobody cared. I was on drugs, and my mom didn't really care because she was on drugs. She was never home.
When I first got pregnant, school was not important to me, so I dropped out. And now that I'm 15, I have 2 babies.
I was heading nowhere. I just thought the only way I can make something out of my life is that if I get an education.
One day I was locked up. That's when I really realized that, I mean, it wasn't for me. Like, I was only in there 2 months, but to me, that was enough. It'd be better for me to stay in school, just get my education.
I still need to go to school to make it for myself.
Stay in school. Give yourself a chance.
I think I'm happier now. I know I'm happier now.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
We're back. And in the second half of the show, I usually give out the phone number. So all of you who are lurking out there and would like to talk to us or ask questions can call in. That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Give us a call. So where were we, Claudia?
We don't remember.
I
was listening to the commercial.
I think we were on the edges of hell when last seen.
Oh yes. We do create our own hell. We do. I know someone who killed her husband and then tried to kill herself, and she did not succeed in killing herself. She only did a lobotomy on herself. And she lives in her own hell now. She makes herself go to church every day. All she does is read the Bible. She's crazy. And she has created her own hell. And it's really sad to watch.
Right. And the living hell, as the saying goes.
Exactly.
You know, we both do clearing work involving ghosts, and one of the things that became very apparent to me is that, besides the fact that most ghosts don't know they're dead, but that ghosts are very confused and think that they're going to be judged, because most of the Western religions are about judgment. Wow. And when they get to the other side, the light, or whatever term you want to use for it, whatever that place is, There's a bureaucracy, which I hope is not like Beetlejuice, but it might be. And they go through some movie. But there is some way that they get carried into that process of getting to a life review, which is not about judgment, but about you set out to do certain things and learn certain things. What happened? How do you feel about that? What feels complete? What doesn't? What do you still need to learn? Now go find your friends and have a party because you're back.
Right. Now, my daughter did not ever tell me about doing a life review. She never told me about that part of it. But she did when she, you know, she couldn't do anything when she was here. Her body wouldn't do anything. So when mm-hmm. she died, she was partying. She was having a good time.
Right.
So she had built her this mansion, and she was having all these big parties and stuff. And about 3 weeks after she died, I would see the mansion, and then all of a sudden it would disappear. And then I would see it, and then it would disappear. And what had happened was she was told that it was time for her to go to work, that her playtime over there was over. It was now time for her to go to work. And she didn't want to, and she was throwing a tantrum. So she would put her mansion back up, and they would take it down. And she would put it up, and they would take it down. And that lasted for about a week before she finally gave in and did what they wanted her to do.
Well, you know, adolescent reaction to what was going on, which was totally age appropriate.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. People have the stories that have been told about what happens when you cross over and what all that is about really scare people.
Right.
Rather than making it feel like going home, which is what it's really about.
Exactly. You know, my daughter, she spent most of her time out of her body because her body did not work.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was very psychic. She could go and do whatever she wanted to do. And I asked her after she died, I said, "Samantha, did you see a tunnel of light like most people talk about?" And she said, "Hell no." My daughter. And she said, "I saw a flash of light when my soul separated from my body." And she said, "Maybe some people see that as a tunnel, but for me it was just a flash. And I was so used to being out of my body that I just simply stepped out."
Right.
And then she went to this mansion that she had already built for herself and, you know, was having parties.
Right. But she was out of her body so much that she really understood about the non-physical and what all that was and had already seen it. That's actually a process that people dying from an illness rather than a sudden death go through. If you've ever been with somebody who's dying, they're present, they're not present, they space out and have conversations with people that the other people in the room can't see. You know, they'll mutter in during the time that they're not very conscious, and they just keep going through that cycle, and they're staying in their body, they're going out of their body, they're staying in the body, they're going out of the body. And the moment of death is actually just one of those moments when they go out of their body to the other side, but they let go.
Right, exactly.
So they've already been prepared, they've already talked to their friends and relatives, they've had their questions answered during that process of slowly reaching the point of letting go. And then they leave. And they usually leave when the room is empty and all the people who have been staying there wanting them not to have to die alone, which you hear a lot, don't realize that their love is so overwhelming that they really need some space to be able to let go.
When my daughter died at home, which I thought that's what I wanted, and
mm-hmm.
was so unexpected. And she was a do not resuscitate, and I'd always told her nurses, if you come in and something's wrong, just give her a kiss and walk away. But Mom had to start doing CPR. So
mm-hmm.
because Mom started doing it, when the nurse got there, the nurse had to continue. And Samantha, while I was out of the room, opened her eyes and smiled at everybody in the room, but she couldn't bring herself to say goodbye to me. And I know that she couldn't, and she couldn't die with me in the room.
Yep.
She had to wait till I was gone. She would have preferred that I had not woke up that night before she died, but
yep.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, and people resuscitating, that happens a lot. That happened with my mother. My mother had been seriously ill for years. I probably will never know exactly how long that illness went on. It was really bad in the last 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. And she was in respiratory distress in the middle of the night, and my dad called an ambulance and told them that she was DNR, not do not resuscitate. But at the emergency room, when she coded, they revived her.
Oh, wow.
And then there were, you know, and she was dying. You know, her organs were failing. There was no way that she was going to live much longer, no matter what they did.
Exactly.
And she spent a good 2 weeks in first intensive care and then respiratory care, and, you know, just hanging on.
Yeah.
And I was an EMT, and I just watched which equipment was next to her bed and which equipment disappeared and what room she was in. And I knew what was going on, but it was horrible for my dad, who was really blindsided. He thought she was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that the people who are doing the emergency procedures are not doing what they think is right and trying to do the best thing for everybody, but
right.
there's a reason that people sign the DNR agreements. And it's true.
It was real easy for me to say don't resuscitate, but then when the mm-hmm. time came, I couldn't. I had to. You know,
yep.
That was my baby there. I had to do something.
Yep.
And I found that very interesting that I wasn't able to carry out my own instructions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's very interesting in emergencies at all. It's very interesting how we respond in ways that we really don't expect to. I want to give out the call-in number again so that people can take advantage of that. If you'd like to talk to us, ask questions, give us your thoughts. The number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. It's the whole process of people getting seriously ill and dying is really very difficult in this culture because there's so little preparation for it.
Yes. And, you know, even when you are prepared, because, you know, my daughter was dying for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
She lived 15 years longer than she was expected to. So, you know, I grieved for 22 years that I was expecting her to die any minute.
Right.
But even though I thought I was prepared and ready, when the time came, I found out you can't be prepared.
Right.
There's no way.
Well, it's even simple things. I remember when my aunt died, my mother's sister, and the whole family assembled for the funeral. And, of course, all the close family members were sitting in the front row by the casket during the ceremony. And my cousin leaned over to me and said, "Do you think she's here?" And I said, "Why?" She said, "Because I have a feeling she's here." And I said, "Look at the velvet cover." And over the casket was a black velvet cover with a single white thread bent into an L. And her name was Lily.
Wow. Yeah.
Right in front of our noses. I'm like, "Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
What's the likelihood of that?"
Instead of a funeral, we had a going away party. We had streamers mm-hmm. hanging from the ceiling and balloons all over the floor. And we had a party, and it was just, it would have been what she loved. She did love it. She helped plan it. She told me what she wanted and, you know, everything that she wanted done. And it was her party, and people did see her. They said they saw her there. It was really
Go ahead. I was going to say I have yet to be at a funeral where the dearly departed wasn't there whispering in the ear of the person giving the eulogy.
Right.
You know, saying, "Oh, and tell about this too. And, oh, yes, he's such a wonderful young man." And, you know, just prompting them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm sitting in the back of the room watching, trying not to giggle, which is totally inappropriate at a funeral.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people that know me, if I happen to be at the funeral of a relative, come over later and say, "So, were they here?"
Yeah. What'd you see?
Right, exactly. Yep. And, yep. And then you say whatever it was that the person said, and they'll go, oh, that sounds just like them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they don't want us to be sad either.
No. No. So tell a little bit more about the range of your healing work and your medical intuitive work. I think that's something that many people don't know very much about, the medical intuitive kind of skills.
Right. The healing is where my heart is. That is my passion, is healing. In medical intuition, I can see into a person's energy field, into their body, tell them things that are going on before it turns into a physical problem, or I can, if they have something going on, I can help them figure out what it is that's causing it and what they can do to fix it. So I've been able to help a lot of people. I mean, it's amazing. I very seldom ever get repeat clients on my healing work, and I thought that was kind of strange. And I had a lady that her husband had some work with me and her sister, and then she called me for some work. And I asked her, I said, well, how's your husband and your sister, because I haven't heard anything. She said, oh, that one session was all they needed. It totally healed them. And,
right.
That's why I don't get repeat business, because it's just amazing to me to watch the miracles that I can perform with people on, pains and aches and things that need to be healed. It's something that I'm really, really good at on other people, not on myself, of course, but on other people.
That's so much the truth. It's so much harder to work on yourself and especially work on your hidden inner things that are going on. Yes. It's just really hard to see in yourself.
Yes.
So, I do a little bit of medical intuitive stuff, but for me, my skill is doing that kind of thing with buildings. So I can see what's going on in the building, what the history of the building is, what emotions are stuck there, whether there are ghosts or other things, what's going on in the land underneath the building. So a lot of the skills, partly because I developed them because it was an interest and a need at the time, is doing things very much like medical intuition, except it's about buildings and land.
And I don't do as much of that as I do with people, though.
Right. And we each have our own skill set. I have a colleague in Australia, Maggie Landman, who calls herself an earth whisperer. And she's one of the most clairvoyant people I've ever met. It's kind of off the charts. But she can see ley lines, underground water, vortexes, everything that's going on in the land. And as she does things to mitigate it, she can see the shifts change.
Wow. And
when we got together about 3 years ago now, I can't believe it's been 3 years, we knew that we had to have our hands touching in a certain way while we were working so that we could transfer the information and the abilities.
Wow.
And we spent 3 weeks going, no, do it my way. Look at it my way. And correlating, because our systems are very different, but right. Our outcomes were the same.
Right.
And so if I did it her way and she did it my way, we started to correlate both the systems of seeing things and the systems of mitigating things. And we both came away with a new set of skills and a new way of looking at stuff. It was great fun. But you had to be in the corner of the restaurant when we were sitting there going, okay, no. I see it this way, but tell me where the underground water is. No, okay, now you tell me where. we're trying not to let anybody hear us, but the conversations were just hysterical.
Yeah, I've had a few of those myself that I'm sure people think we're crazy when they overhear the conversations.
Well, I was invited to speak in Sedona a few years ago, and I took a bus up from, I think, Phoenix, and the gal who invited me, who's a master dowser and does amazing healing work, picked me up, and we went to a coffee shop to just hang out and let me decompress. And we're sitting at a very small table with our heads together, whispering, because we're talking about really weird stuff.
Yeah.
And at some point, she said, But the strange thing was, and I laughed so hard and so long we had to leave. I was standing outside holding on to the wall. I was laughing so hard. Like, oh, that was the strange thing. All the other stuff we talked about was not strange, but that was, you know, and what she meant was the thing that doesn't fit the way I understand things is this little piece over here that's a complete anomaly that I don't really have a way of understanding. I was like, oh, that was the weird part, was it?
Yeah. It's interesting. It does.
Right. And it always changes. I know for me, the whole shamanic experience is about sitting in the moment, not knowing what the right thing to do is and asking for what to do next.
Yes.
And then doing what you're told.
Exactly. And the session I do is different. You know, nothing is ever the same in any of the things that I do. I always do something different every time.
Right. Right.
And a lot of it is, it just comes to me to do something. I it's not anything I've ever learned. I just hear it, you know, do this, and I do it, and it works.
Right.
I can't explain to people how I do it or where I come up with it or any of that. It's just there.
Yeah. Well, I always use the metaphor of a particular scene in The Matrix, in the first Matrix movie. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It's kind of a violent movie, but there's so much interesting metaphysical and political stuff in it that it's really it's a very multi-layered set of meanings. And there's a scene where they're in a battle on top of a roof, and they win against unbeatable odds, and they know they have to get off the building. And there's this helicopter that the people they were fighting with were using to try and get them. And Trinity says, "We got to go." And he says, "Do you know how to fly that thing?" She said, "No, but give me a minute." And she calls the operator, the person who's outside the Matrix, and says, "I need to be able to fly whatever number, you know, whatever model number it is, helicopter." Uh-huh. And the guy plugs in a tape, and she shakes for a couple of seconds, and she goes, "Okay, come on." And she gets in the helicopter, and she flies it. And, you know, that experience is something I have all the time. Like,
exactly.
You know, elves? Elves? You guys are elves? I don't know anything about it. Yeah. I know about trolls, but I don't know about elves. Hang on a minute. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tell me about elves real fast because they're in my face.
Extraterrestrials exactly.
You know, like whatever it is, it's like, okay, just give me the download right now, and suddenly you have answers. Suddenly you have a whole comprehension of something, but you wouldn't have had that information if you didn't need it because you didn't have a reason to ask.
Right.
And that's really hard for people that are very linear.
And then once you get that information, it seems like more opportunities to use it come up.
Exactly. Yeah. Because now, in effect, you've been trained.
Exactly.
I always say that this work, in medical work, people need to be desensitized to blood and smells. In this work, you need to be desensitized to weirdness, to just plain strange things.
Yeah. You know, we recently moved, and my niece and her husband moved with us. We're sharing the house. And he is not – he's a baby into all of this. And I just freak him out something horrible. We live in this really old house, an old Victorian house. And across the street is another old Victorian house that they're renovating. And when he sits outside and smokes a cigarette at night, he's looking at that house. And he kept telling me that he was seeing this shape in the window over there. And I never could see it. It never happened when I was out there. So they come running in the house one night. Claudia, it's there. Come look. So I go out there and I look, and I can see it through the window. And I just take off across the street. And he's freaking out.
Yep.
Oh, my God, what are you doing? And I just walked up and looked in the window. And he was just freaking out because I was fixing to get eat up by a ghost, and he was going to have to go fight for me.
Right. it's strange stuff. Hey, I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with you. So why don't you give your contact information?
Okay, my website address is very simple. It's askclaudia.com. So you can ask me whatever you want to ask. And I'm really easy to find on Facebook. It's Facebook / Claudia McNeely. I share a lot of good information on there. I do a daily energy alert to kind of help people understand why they have headaches that day or their foot hurts or, you know, the different things that are going on each day. And that's yep. helped a lot of those of us who are earth sensitive. It's really helped us.
They help me a lot, and I pass them along to people.
Yeah, yeah. It helps me, too. Yeah.
Right, because people really don't have a sense that it's not just them. You know, people say, oh, I don't feel good today, or whatever their way of looking at it is, making it something that they own, not
right.
realize.
It makes me feel better to know it's not just me. I'm not right. imagining this. I'm not having a heart attack, you know. My back isn't broke, you know, things like that. It helps know it's not just us.
Right. And you include astrology, solar flares, seismic information that you get from different websites, the
right.
activity of the HARP antenna, all kinds of things
right.
in there.
Right.
And I'm astrology. So I remember there was an eclipse, and right when the eclipse started, I was suddenly exhausted. I had to take mm-hmm. a nap. I just couldn't function. And later on that afternoon, I saw your blurb about what was going on that day and realized that it was exactly at the time of the eclipse that,
yeah.
you know, I got slammed.
Yeah. I will have this pain in the middle of my back, right behind, in between my shoulder blades. It'll feel like my back is about to literally explode. And whenever I get that pain, there's going to be an earthquake in Indonesia.
Wow.
It never felt.
Well, you know, it's fascinating, though. I want to do this quickly, so because I don't want to run over, I want you to be able to give your contact information again. But I have had a friend who used to live in California. She's now in Texas. And she would call me and say, I think I'm going crazy. I'm just sitting here completely in despair. I'm crying. I'm grieving. I don't know what's going on. And after the second or third time she did it, I knew that what she had to do was go on CNN.com and find out where mothers and children were dying or in danger in a natural disaster.
Yes.
Because every time it happened on the planet, she felt it and her body just immediately went into grieving for the families, for the children and the mothers. People are sensitive to different kinds of energy, different kinds of information. And if you don't ask whether it's yours, it's really hard to figure out.
Yes.
So, Claudia, give your contact information one more time.
Okay. It's askclaudia.com, askclaudia.com.
Terrific. And thank you so much for being on. Just want to mention our guest for next week is going to be Cherokee Billy, who is someone who's in a family of psychics. So she's been psychic all her life, but she grew up in a household where everybody was psychic. And she does some absolutely fascinating work. So that will be next week here on the Farkas Files. I'm David Franklin Farkas. Thanks for being with us on Empower Radio.